is Parshas Shoftim. Shoftim v'Shoytrim. I think from all the Shivdei Nechemta, from all of the Shivdei Nechemta, this Haftorah is the nicest. It's a very, very powerful Haftorah. Incredible Haftorah. Yeshaya, Anochi, Anochi hu menachemchem. This I Hashem will give you nechama. The words, the psukim are really off the charts. All the Zayin Nechemta are beautiful, but this one really is a very special Haftorah. It's a special. It's the third. It's the Egla. What is it called in the Gemara? Egla Meshulash. The Egla Meshulash of the Zayin Nechemta. The third born of the Egla. The third born is the healthiest. It's the tastiest. The Egla, this is the Egla Meshulash of the Shivdei Nechemta, a very beautiful Haftarah, which begins with the words Hashem says, Anoichi, Anoichi hu menachemchem. It is so I.
The fourth?
Aschanan, Ekev, Re'e, Shoiftim. You're right, I made a mistake. It's the fourth, correct?
It's the fourth one.
It's correct, I made a mistake. It's the fourth, okay? It's the fourth.
Right in the middle.
Yeah.
Avudram's shot, he says that the Sefer HaTorah of Nechama.
Conversation. It's a conversation.
Or a dialogue.
Between Hashem. Yeah.
Nevi'im and Klal Yisrael. Right. Because Baruch Hu says, Nachamu, Nachamu Ami.
You go.
Go and console my people. And then the second HaTorah, they say.
They try.
We're not consoled.
They're not consoled. Okay, I'll do it myself.
And now this is the key parsha.
I will do it myself. It's a beautiful Avudram.
Yeah.
If we have time, I'll say it over at the end. It's a beautiful conversation between Hashem and the Nevi'im. Beautiful. It's a very powerful. This year you get a little bit messed up though, because this year
usually does. You know, it's good for a lot of drushes. Shepherd brothers different.
Problem this year this year doesn't work because this year we got Rosh Chodesh last week.
Yeah.
So we went on a whole drush on that.
Yeah, we went through that.
Okay, let's learn. I want to make a Deacon Rashi, interesting again Rashi regarding he says this week's parasha we have a lot of wars. A lot of different wars. A good chunk of the parasha deals with dealing with people. going to war with people. You go to war against your enemies. And you'll see in the battlefield, don't be afraid, Hashem is with you. And now we go to the battlefield, and the Koyin Meshuach Muhammad comes and he says, okay, who wants an exemption? Who wants a pitur? Who wants to be exempt from going to the war?
Yes, but this is very interesting though. If you take a look at the Sefer Torah, it's the most common place for the Balkori when
to make a mistake.
It's exactly on the same spot on the Omid, Kiseitse.
Right.
And I've seen it a few times already where the Balkori started from the wrong Omid.
You got another halachas, you have to say it again. Kiseitze la milchama. Next week's parasha is Kiseitze la milchama levechu nisanoi. The eshes yifas toya. But this week is parasha shoftim. We have also the same opening words. Kiseitze la milchama al oyevecha. Same exact words. And here it says the vira isa. And you will see a sus v'rechav. You're going to see an army sus v'rechav. Am rav nimcha. See them ahead. Don't be afraid. Don't worry. Yashem Elokecha, Imach Hashem, Hashem is with you, Hashem is with you. Hamalcha mi'eretz Mitzrayim. Okay, then they go out to the battlefield, and now come the Koyein Meshuach Muhammad, and he comes now to give out exemptions. Who are the exemptions? Milish, who is the man who built a new bayis, beautiful new house, and did not yet make a Chanukah sabayis? Potter, why the pasuk says, Pen Yomus Bamulchamah. Maybe he will die in battle. The ish acher yach nechenem, and someone else will inaugurate his bayis. And Rashi says agmas nefesh. This is a very painful thing. Pasuk hey in Rashi. There's a lot of psychology here. There's a lot of diukim. I just want to focus. On one specific prat. Rashi over here says the pasuk at the end Rashi says loy darbo v'davar shel agmas nefesh huzeh. This is agmas nefesh. You don't want a person to have in battle agmas nefesh. Okay, fine. And then it goes on to say anyone who mishar shenot, any person who built a vineyard, v'loy chiloloy, did not bring neter avai. Yelich v'yasul v'esop and yemusom l'chama. Who mishar she'edas isha v'loy l'kocho, did not take her as a wife. Yelich v'yasul v'esop and yemusom l'chama. Mishar chay yikochem. Maybe we'll come back to some other deacon I want to mention, but maybe a little more. But right now, let's get to the next part. The Yosefu Hashoitrim Ladabra Lo'am V'yam Romilish Hayorei V'rachalevav. Anyone here that's afraid? Anyone here that has a soft heart? Yelech V'yoshom L'Veso V'lo Yimas. We don't want you to, it's contagious. Fear and cowardness is contagious. We don't want you to melt the heart of your comrades. Rashi, very, very important Rashi. Rashi presents a machloikis tanoim as to what this pasuk means. Is it a machloikis? Hayorei v'rach alevav. Rabbi Akiva oimer kimashmo'oi. Pshutoi kimashmo'oi. Is there anyone here she'eino yochel v'amod b'kishrei ha'mulchama v'lirois cheref shalufa? Is there anyone over here that cannot bear to see a drawn sword? You see an enemy pointing a gun at you, you faint. Is there anyone here that has that medical condition? You see the cannon is pointed at you, you just can't deal with it. If there's anyone here, leave immediately. Because you're a danger to everyone else. Because when you'll faint, you will dishearten everyone, their hearts will melt, and it will be a lost battle. Pshutoi kemashmoi. Okay. Then we know, I think many people are more, this is more popular, the next line, the next opinion. Rabbi Yosi Aglili Oimer. What does it mean? It means, Hayorei me'averois shebiyadoi. Anyone that's afraid of blood, afraid of weapons, no. You go fight. When it says Hayore Barach Levav, this means a person knows that he has done averos and he is afraid that he doesn't have the merit, and the lack of merit or the kitroi upon him will cause him to die. Fine. Then he goes further. I mean, he's going further. This is the important point I want to make. Ulechem, therefore, according to Rabbi Yosef Lili, therefore, Tolsalea Toiro Lachsar al Beis al Bayis, the Kedem the Isha. Do you know why the Torah exempts a person who built a new house, a person who planted a vineyard, a person who got married, should also be exempt? It's not because they're really exempt. Really, so what, you built a house? Who cares? Who cares you built a house? So what, you got married? You got to fight. That's life. All of your comrades, all of your friends are fighting. You have to fight also. It's only lechasois, to cover up ala choizrim b'shvil averois shebiyodom, because the people who have done averois, they're embarrassed. And when people are walking home from the battlefield because they have done averois, they're put to shame. They're embarrassed. So we want to exempt, we want other people to go home with them, so that when someone looks at you, that this person is leaving because he did an Avera, they're going to say it's not because he did an Avera, it's because he built a bayis, he planted a vineyard, or he got married. L'chasois, b'shvil Avera Shabiyadim, sh'lo yovinu, l'chasois alachos b'shvil Avera Shabiyadim, sh'lo yovinu, sh'heim ba'le Avera. V'horo ehu, anyone that observes the person who did an Avera leave the battlefield, anyone that witnessed the person that's been choizer, Oimer will say, Shema! The reason why this person is going home is not because he did an Avera. Shema bonabayis oinot akerem oy eras isha. Okay, so here's my question. Here's the deal. We have Machloikis, Rabbi Akiva, Yosef Glili. Rabbi Akiva says there are four people who are truly exempt from battle. Four people. Bayis, Kedem, Isha. Rabbi Yosef Glili says there's only one person that's exempt from battle. Only one person. Who's the one person? one person is Aveir Shabiyada. And what about the other three?
The cover up.
Just a cover up. Wait a minute. What about according to Rabbi Akiva? Wouldn't you also argue that the only one that's go talk to a general today in any army? Who's who? You can't. You built a bias. You're exempt. Go try to get out of jury duty, right? Go to jury duty. You know, I'm running a corporation. I'm running a $1 million business. I can't be a. I don't care. You're a citizen. This is your duty. I don't care what you're doing. I don't care that you're the biggest surgeon in the world. I don't care who you are. The judge. It's almost impossible to get out of jury duty. You can argue all you want, but you go to battle. You built a house. You built a vineyard. You got married. Who cares? There's a war going on. Who cares? Go fight. I don't care you. Everyone has an excuse. You say, you know, if I go to the battlefield and I see a web, I'm going to faint. That's a reality. I'm a coward. I'm going to faint. And when I faint, it's contagious. You know, we got a problem. You know, you're exempt. Now, when you go home because you're a coward, that's pretty bad. It's not good for Shidduchim. When a guy is going off in the battlefield, let's make believe the only exemption would be because the person is basically a coward. You don't have the stamina to fight. He's a Nebuch. Who would want to marry this guy?
There's no other men left.
You want a strong man. No, you want a strong man. A woman wants a strong man. You want a person I can't go look. You'll never get anywhere in life. Life is not so pleasant. I don't do diapers. You have a child. No. I don't do diapers. This is not a mahalik in life, right? It's not. So what should we say? What would you argue? I would argue the MS is, you built a bias, a kedem, isha? What kind of excuse is that? You can't get out of jury duty for that. You're not going to get out of going to war for that. War is much more important for Kali Yisrael. What kind of? Agmas Nefesh? Everyone has Agmas Nefesh. Agmas, plenty of Agmas Nefesh to go around in every dimension. Or the person that has 12 children, and he's not going to have Agmas Nefesh if he dies? He didn't get to marry off one of his children? I mean, where do you draw the line, Agmas Nefesh? Just because I got married, Agmas Nefesh?
I'm surprised they didn't accept how his wife is expecting.
What? Whatever it is, where do you draw the line with Agma? I built a field. Oh, very good. Yeah. Where do you draw the line? You fully understand a person that's afraid to see a cheder shuvah. And in fact, the pasuk really says that it's a much more severe problem because it says shema. By the other three, it just says if you build a bayis, go home. Kem, go home. The Tos doesn't explain. Rashi has to be the one that explains of Agmas Nefesh. But the pasuk doesn't explain. But when it comes to the person, and according to Rabbi Akiva, it simply means you just cannot deal with battle. The pasuk says this is a real problem. The pasuk tells you the reason. We don't want you to melt the heart of the people. The pasuk is the only one where the pasuk says. So the question I'm asking is, why don't we say exactly the same principle? Why don't we say that really the only one that is exempt is the coward? And the Torah doesn't want to embarrass him. So the Torah says, if you built a bias, you planted a vineyard, you got married, you guys go home and cover up for the coward. I'm calling him a coward. That's not nice, because maybe he'll say he's a schwachmensch, feinschmeck, whatever it is. But it's a big problem. Why don't we say, you learn the Rashi, it's clear as day in the words of Rashi, the only one that employs the principle of covering up, not to be embarrassed, is Rabbi Yossi Haglili. Rabbi Yossi Haglili says, as a matter of fact, there's only one exemption. Ayorei min ho'averois shebiyadah. This person we gotta protect. We gotta protect him. Cover up. Everyone else make up excuses. Bayis, Kedem, Isha, go home. Walk with him. Cover up. But according to Rabbi Akiva, there's no cover up. According to Rabbi Akiva, he doesn't say this. And the words of Rashi, who only Rabbi Yosef Elul, he says cover up. Rashi, Rabbi Akiva, Admas Nefesh. And now you're going to have to split hairs why this is called Admas Nefesh and not that. A guy who has 12 children and didn't merit to marry off one of his children, oh, that's not called Admas Nefesh. But a person that got married and didn't have children yet, that's Admas Nefesh. Okay, you're going to have to really work very, very hard, burn the midnight oil to split hairs in defying Admas Nefesh. And there's a fourth patur, person who's afraid of war. Why can't Rabbi Akiva avoid the whole scratching your head to figure out, to split hairs, what's called Agmas Nefesh, what's not called Agmas Nefesh, and just say, there's only one pitur in war. You're afraid to fight. You're a coward. I just can't deal with blood. I'm a tzaddik, you said, a law of Harris, but I see blood. I go with my sugar. I see a weapon. I see someone shooting a gun at me. I go crazy. So, okay, go home.
His concept is kipshuta.
Kipshuta. So my question
so
here is
right down the line, everything is kipshuta.
So the question is, why? Exactly, that's exactly what Mikita says.
Exactly what says.
Everything is kipshuta.
Exactly.
But why can't we borrow? Why can't Rabbi Akiva borrow a principle from Rabbi Yossi Haglil? Rabbi Yossi Aglili says two things.
Question of Rabbi Yossi Aglili, it doesn't have to be. It's not.
Oh, so let's explain. Right,
you know,
so we're touching upon. Let's explain.
It's Kataimo, Kajito, so.
Let's explain.
Yes.
Exactly, let's bring it out. According to Rabbi Yossi Aglili, Hayore v'halach ha'leivav is mish yesh aveirois biyodai. Rabbi Akiva's pshuta. But Rabbi Yossi Aglili says the second principle. The only pitur is Misha Yesh Averos Biyodoi, and now we need a cover up for him. Why can't Rabbi Akiva use the same logic? It'll make life so much easier for us. Because the Svara of Agmas Nefesh is a very difficult Svara. To say that because you built a house, you built a vineyard, and you got married, you have more Agmas Nefesh if they die than if someone who has 12 children and didn't marry them off. That's a lot, you know, it's a very difficult svara to start splitting hairs and defining what's called Agmas Nefesh, what's not called Agmas Nefesh.
So
why can't
not Kipshuto, so the first one's also not Kipshuto.
But why can't we simply say, let me
sum it up. Splitting his hairs.
Okay, you're right. But why can't we simply say that according to Rabbi Akiva, there's only one person that is exempt from fighting in war? And that's the person that cannot.
Presenting a possible answer.
And then let the other three.
Destroys his own.
No, he doesn't destroy. As I said, he doesn't destroy anything. Why can't
he holds us all kipshuto?
Oh, that's my question.
And now you're going to say, well, maybe this is pshuto and that's not pshuto. You know, you're ripping him up.
That's the question. So we're going to give an answer. We're going to give an answer, but let's just present the question. The question,
okay.
Why can't we say that according to Rabbi Akiva, you're on the ball, you're on the ball here.
Yeah.
Why can't we say that according to Rabbi Akiva, there's only one pitur, a person that is afraid to deal with war. He's not cut out for war. And now, got to go home. What a busha uchlima. What an embarrassment he is to society, to his family, to his children. That this guy, you see this guy walking down the road, coming back from the battlefield. Why is he coming? Why was he dismissed? Because he fainted when he saw the enemy. He saw the tanks on the other side.
I can't understand why anybody would not faint if you see his cannon blowing in his face or a sword outstretched.
It says obviously they didn't faint. It's no, so not everyone fainted.
Who is so crazy that they want to be in the front lines of battle?
It says in the Pasuk, Lo Yisira Me'em Ki Hashem Elokecha
Imach.
Okay, we're dealing with very holy people. We're not dealing with the 21st century here.
Right.
So now, let's ask the question, why can Rabbi Akiva say the only one that is exempt is a person that cannot deal with battle? And now, the other three people are coming home with him to cover up his shame. The same way, according to Rabbi Yosef Galili, the other three people are really not exempt. They're only coming back to cover up because he's Yorei from the Avera Shebi Yodai. Why can't Rabbi Akiva say the same exact lomdis? There's only one person that's exempt from war, a person that cannot deal with battle. And the other three people that are coming home only as a cover-up for the person that's a coward. We don't want to put to shame a person who is a coward. We don't want to put him to shame. He's going to be walking home. Ooh, why are you going home? Oh, because he's not a good soldier. He's afraid he fainted. Oh, this guy's a nebuch. What a bush or chlima. So the Torah should have rachmanis on him and make up excuses. Build a bayis, Karen Isha. You also go home. You walk with him. So no one's going to know about the coward. Rabbi Akiva doesn't say that. Rabbi Akiva says, Bias, Kerem, Isha are legitimate reasons not to fight in battle, and a Yorei from seeing war is also a legitimate reason. The only one that employs the principle of covering up for the bush of a person is Rabbi Yossi Aglili, who says there's only one exemption, and that's a Yorei Ben Averi Shabiyado, and that person we cannot, then we have to make up excuses to go, we have to cover him up.
But why even if Rabbi Yossi Aglili, you're coming up with three other categories who really should be going.
That's right.
And we're exempting them for a cover-up for this guy.
Right.
First of all, why did he pick these three categories as people for cover-ups for them?
It's a good agmas nefesh, but it's not, you're 100% right, but
with other ones also.
We anyway need to, no one is, according to Rabbi Yosef, no one is exempt from war. There's no such thing. The only one is a Yerim and Averish of the other. Now we have to do something for him.
But to come up with three categories,
so we pick three
people
to
exempt them?
Yes, it's exactly what it says. I'm not making this up. Rabbi Yossi Aglili says there's only one person that is exempt.
That's why it's hard to
That's it. The other three people.
This view is very hard to understand.
It's very hard to understand. But
we came up with three new categories.
It is very difficult, but it's not as difficult. It's not as difficult as Rabbi Akiva. Because according to Rabbi Akiva, the pitur of bias, kedem, and isha are exemptions in their own right. What? Why those? I could show you a million scenarios with this agmas nefesh. No, this in its own right
that
is a pitur.
That we possibly could answer. Why those? Why
no.
Different? But to say that people are totally pitur, there for the cover up.
A cover up is a cover up. Once a cover up, it doesn't have to make sense. Obviously, you have to go and find categories, but it's not a pitur be'etzem. Rabbi Akiva is saying a chiddush, the potter be'etzem. Be'etzem. You built a bayis, a kem yisha. Why, Rashi? Agmas nefesh. That's the reason, agmas nefesh. I could show you a million cases of agmas nefesh, even more agmas nefesh than this, and they're not potter. You've got a big problem here. According to Rabbi Yossi, you also have a problem. But the problem is not as intense because they're not really potter. You're right. There's no real reason why they're exempt. The Torah just needs to cover up somebody. We want to cover up. We don't want a person to put. So if we got an eeny, meeny, miny, mo, we got to pick some people. Oh, these are famous people. He built a bayis. These are famous people. He built a bayis. He built a kerem. It's a kasha. Why these three? But being that it's not be'etzem a pitur, it's just a cover up. Okay, so someone's got to cover up. So we'll make some people are famous people, people who are celebrities this year. So I want to give you, let me give you the answer. The answer is, Einachanami. Okay. According to, the Torah here is indirectly teaching you an incredible principle. The only thing to be embarrassed of in this world are your averas. The person who's a coward, Torah, I don't care. You're a coward? You're embarrassed? So be embarrassed. So people are going to look at you that you're a coward? No, that you can't see weapons of mass destruction pointing in your face. You're embarrassed. You know, in life there's a lot of embarrassment. Everywhere you go, there's bushuchim. Wherever you go, there's embarrassment. So you're embarrassed. You're embarrassed whether you deserve to be embarrassed. You don't deserve to be embarrassed. The Torah is not here to treat everyone with white gloves. The Torah is not creating a society. Oh, when a guy walks into shul, you know, he might be embarrassed, this. Oh, you have to go bend backwards. You can't live like that. People are embarrassed. That's the way the world is. The Torah is not going to, you can't solve every problem. This fellow, he's embarrassed. What are we trying to suggest in the opinion of Rabbi Akiva? We're trying to suggest a renewal, a makeover of Rabbi Akiva. There's only one person that is exempt, a person that cannot deal with war. In society, people look up to people who are macho. That's the society, people that are generals. You see in Israel, in Israeli politics, if you were a general in the army, oh, Barak, Sharon, the generals, they did this. Oh, these are macho people. They put their lives on the line. They fought battles. They almost died. They were injured. Oh, everyone in society goes, ooh la la. These are chash of the people. People that are not afraid. This guy is afraid. He's a Nebuch. He can't go look. Oh, now we have to go protect him. No one should say boo. We have to go and shelter him. No. There's no such thing. That's like a 21st century concept in America. No such thing. You have to take responsibility for who you are and what you are. You're afraid to fight? Okay, so deal with it. You're afraid to fight. You're exempt. You also want. It's not enough that you don't have to go to work. We also have to cover up for you and give you a package, a nice benefit package. Listen. You can't fight? Be happy that we're letting you go home from the battlefield. We also have to bow down to you and shelter you with creating more exemptions because it's not politically correct to allow a person to walk home from battle all alone because people are going to say the wrong thing. This is like a 21st woke concept. Be a responsibility for who you are. V'zehu. Yet, on the other hand, the Torah is megala, an incredible chiddush. That if you have a person who's yore, who's a macho person, I can wipe out armies. I have more skill and power, givura, than the whole army put together. But you know something? I did some pretty serious stuff. I did some pretty bad averas. And I acknowledge that battles are not won because of givura. Battles are won because Hashem wants you to win. Hashem wants you to win. And I realize I may not be the right person for this battle in the Mulchama that's L'Shem Hashem. It's Mulchama Shushus here, but it's still L'Shem Hashem. It's a religious battle. I might not be that. Such a person has the nobility to be Yore Me'avero Shebiyodo. This person deserves respect. This person deserves that the Torah take care of him and cover his shame. The contrast between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yossi Aglili is unbelievable. Rabbi Akiva refused to go down the path of Rabbi Yossi Aglili if you want to learn the pshat of Hayore V'rach Levav means I can't deal with blood and war and battle. I can't deal with it. You can't deal with it? Okay, go home. You're exempt. But don't expect the Torah to go and pamper you and cover up for you and treat you as a celebrity and you're equal to everyone else in this world. Your consequences. You don't want to train yourself to be a Gibor Muhammad? Okay, so you're exempt. But we're not going to pamper you. We're not going to go and bow down to you and give you opportunities at the expense of other people. Affirmative action. We're not going to go do this. Get lost. Go home. You're exempt. Oh, so why then is the bias, the kerem, and the isha also exempt? Because they're potter be'etzem. Because there's they have their own special reason. They're not there for you. Don't make that mistake and think they're covering up. They're not covering up for you. They're there for their own special reason. But Rabbi Yossi HaGlili, who introduces a novel concept, that the person that's afraid is not afraid because of blood. He's not afraid of that. He has a whole resume. He has a whole resume. He went on suicide missions many, many times. He has more lives than a cat. He went on, he couldn't care less. So why talk is he afraid? He's a Yerushalayim. The Torah here is putting this person on a pedestal, on a platform. In my world, Hashem says, that's choshev. That's what's choshev. Those are the celebrities in this world. Those are people that deserve special treatment, that a person can mamish say, the yorim yaver shebiyodai. They deserve to be sheltered and will make up, fabricate other exemptions, ini, mani, mo, to shelter this person, that a Yorei Shemayim should not feel pain and feel busha uchlima over the Averi Shabi Yadav. Obviously, why am I saying, this is not very practical, you know, you're dealing over here, you know, on a very pure, idealistic concept. But the Torah over here...
The problem is, what has continuation, below you must at Levav Echav in Vavo. If we Yirei Shamayim, let others do the same thing. Also Yirei Shamayim. Everybody would say,
Rabbi Yosef says, you can say one of two things. You can say that, no, when a person is Yor Zira Shamayim, he's afraid that Averi Shabi, he's not going to perform well, and the other people, the Yirei Shamayim. It's just that when one of the members of your team is not performing well, it affects you also. Even though you do have Yirei Shamayim, and maybe you're right. Maybe when one person sees maybe that's right, you're going to trigger feelings of lack of Yirei Shamayim, which is not warranted in this case. There's a time when you have to be afraid, and time when you're not, everyone has. Ein tzadik ba'aretz asher yaseh tov lo yecht. Everyone has what to worry about. But there are different madregos. This person has a serious aver. So he doesn't want to be involved. The other people, what do they do already? They read a pamphlet in Chazaras HaShatz. You don't have to be worried about that. You can go to war. That's not called Hayyar Me'aver Shabiyodo. You weren't paying close attention to every word of Chazaras HaShatz. This is my greatest. Okay, Akan. Another one. It says over here, something very interesting. It says over here, when they go to Muhammad, the Koy Mashuach Muhammad, he says, Shema Yisrael. The opening words of the Koy Mashuach Muhammad is, Shema Yisrael, listen. Rashi says, what's the Shema Yisrael? They got a script. We give him a script. The Omar Aleihem, Shema Yisrael. Atem kreivim hayon lamilchama al oilech. Rashi says, what's this? Ashma Yisrael. Pasuk Gimel. Afilu ein bochem zuchos elo kriya shma bolvat. Chizuk. He tells the soldiers, you're going to war. And, you know, it's a dangerous battlefield. Things can happen. You need merit. If the only merit you have is the fact that twice a day you say Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, that alone will serve as a merit to save you. Kedai Atem Shayoshia Eschem. It's enough for Hashem to save you. All right, very nice.
That includes the three parashiyos.
It includes not necessarily two parashiyos, L'chor, probably only the first two parashiyos, or even the first parashiyos. We have the first pasuk, Midaraisa. What is Kriya Shema Midaraisa? Three-way machlekes. According to one opinion, it's just the first pasuk. Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Second opinion is until the words, the second pasuk, the Yohafta, and the second pasuk, Vayuha Devorim Vayil Hashem Elokeinu Mitzavcha Yoyim Al Livavecha Adkan. That's their Isa. And the third opinion says the first parsha until you have to read the entire parsha. Three opinions, but Shema, only the source of Kriya Shema Bolvat. Question. Why Kriya Shema? Why Kriya Shema? There are so many mitzvahs. There are Taryag mitzvahs. Why does the Torah tell us the only thing that you need to survive is Kriya Shema? Why does the pasuk, the Torah, put the zechus of Kriya Shema on a pedestal? There's a whole book. We got a whole book here, Taryag Mitzvahs. What about if you shook Lulav and Esrog, you blew shofar, you gave tzedakah, you put on tefillin? I mean, Taryag Kosher, you're shomer Shabbos. Did you observe Shabbos? Shomer Shabbos. What more do you want? What is it about Kriya Shema? So you said, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. My hat. So I think the pasuk is the end of the story, really answers the question, and I think it presents an entirely different perspective about battle. What is battle? See, Rabbi Chol is not here. He would love this. Rabbi Chol, this is up his alley. What exactly is battle? So battle, of course, is blood. Go to war, old-fashioned. War and blood. What?
Blood. Gore.
Gore?
Gore.
What's gore? Gore and
G-O-R-E. The kishkas come out.
Gore and blood, that's an expression?
Gore
and blood. Gore. It's like, you know, you see in the movies.
Gory.
You see the real deal, you fight with weapons and this blood and this all the har. Okay, that's obviously what war, obviously that's war. But you know, there are other types of wars. There's a war of the minds. You see in politics all the time where there's a war in the media to get a headline, right? The way you to create a certain to win the minds of people, to present information in a certain way where it fits into your narrative, your agenda, what you believe in. Every in politics, you have candidates and you have events. So you can spin any event. You can take any event and you can show the minus. And you can show the chesroinos. And each candidate, as you see, everyone flip-flops, every politician at some point in time. Oh, but you said 2 years ago that you would never do this. So you have to be very creative, you know, you have to. There's a war on the minds of people. That's another type of war. There's a war with the Yetzer Hara. War is a very abstract term. There are many different types of wars. Rashi here says something very, very important. Rashi says, going out to war, when they finish, they go out to war. And then when they engage in war, Rashi says, you find the exact words. Here it is. It's really in the beginning. In the beginning of the whole story of war, al yerach levachem, don't be afraid. And let's find the pasuk. The pasuk of Beis. V'hoya kikarvachem alam lucham avidigash alchayim avidir alam. V'yam aleihem shnai yishlashem atem yirayim alam alam. Al yerach levachem. Number one, your heart should not be soft. Al tiru, number two, do not be afraid. V'al tach pizu, don't tremble. V'al ta'artzu, I ran out of words. Don't be frightened. These are different words. What is the difference, the nuance in the English translation of these words? I don't know. Different expressions of being afraid. Rashi comes to the rescue. Rashi acknowledges, what's all these poetry, all these words, these synonyms, they all mean the same thing at the end of the day. What do they really mean? Al yirach v'alcha v'al tiru v'al tachbizu v'al ta'aretzu. Arba az horois. There are four warnings. Kineged arba'od devorim. Four things that was customary in ancient times when they would fight wars. Kineged the four things that the goyim would do when they went to war. Number one, magifin b'tari sehem, kidei lahakishon ze lo ze, kidei lahashmiya kol, a sound sheyach poizu. Okay, well, actually once saw a documentary on YouTube once upon a time on this. This is utterly fascinating, in the art of ancient warfare, where the soldiers, they carry these massively heavy bronze shields. And the shields were constructed in a way where they interlocked one with another. They're like bulldozers, human bulldozers. These massively heavy shields. I don't know, no one even knows today how they're able to carry them. They had to be giants, very, very powerful, very strong people to hold these shields. They were very, very large. And they interlock with one another, and they would stand in formation. They would stand in formation with a very big line, and they would all march together against the enemy, basically crushing them. Like a bulldozer, just like going forward. And then they showed us in the document that before they actually began the march to run them over with these massively large shields that interacted, they would bang them one against the other. Like in a circle, like you ever see these soldiers, they march in these parades, and they do these maneuvers with their weapons and their hands. They would bang them one against the other in a certain in formation, in with a technique which made an extremely loud sound. And this loud sound, the combination, the multimedia presentation, when the enemy sees a whole row, a massively large row of formation of these mighty soldiers holding these massive shields, and they're interconnected, and then they open them up and they bang it one against the other in this formation. It's a deafening sound, combined with the fact that they're marching. It terrifies, literally terrifies the enemy, and their hearts melt. So the Goyim of Shulchan Aruch says that's what you should expect. That's what's going to happen. You go out to war, you're going to see a formation of the Canaanim standing against you, holding these massively large shields. They're going to bang them one against the other. The sound is deafening. It's going to naturally, it is a natural human instinct for your hearts to melt when you hear that clang, when they bang one against the other. It's the sound is deafening. That's the first thing. Magifin b'tari re-sehem. Kedei lehakisham, to bang them. Zeh lo zeh kedei lehashmia, to bring forth a sound. Kol sheyech pozu, you should be terrified. Next. Elu shechenegon v'yonusu. That's number one. Number two. V'roimsim b'susehem, they would trample with their horses. U'mashilin oisam, they would hit their horses to cause the horses to shout, to neigh. And when you hear 1,000 horses neigh, you hear that sound of the horses shouting in formation as they're beginning to march. They would bang the horses in a certain way. They train the horses to make sounds. And when the enemy heard these loud shouts of the horses, the neigh of the horses in battle, umatzhilin oisam, they would arouse them lehashmia, to give forth a sound, kol shatas perosay susehem utzavachim bekoilam. I skip one. So first they would cause the horse to make long sounds. Next thing was with the hoofs of the horses. They would have them bang against the ground. You'll hear that, you know, the galloping of the horses. They would do it on purpose just to produce a sound. The parosa susim, utzavachim b'koilam, and they would shout with their voices. And number four was, v'toikin b'shoifrois, u'minei mashmieko, they would blow shoifer. So over here, Rashi says something incredible that you would never even realize if not for reading. The passage just says four times, you go into war, don't be afraid, al yerach levavchem, al ta'artzu, al techpesu, and lo siro. Four expressions of fear. And Rashi says these four expressions of fear are a response to the four types of sound that you're going to hear. And this sound is a terrifying sound that naturally affects your brain and shuts it off. That's the reality, that's the science. A person hears the clinging of the shields. When you hear the neighing of the horses, when you hear the hoofs of the horses stamping, you hear the shouts of the soldiers, and you hear the shofars, the horns that they blow in the battlefield. These are all different types of sounds. When you hear these sounds, you're going to faint. That's natural. We said when we learned about Tisha B'Av, we spoke about all the sounds of the Holocaust. Okay, all the different sounds. The sounds of the cattle cars on the railroad tracks going to Auschwitz. The sounds of
the barking of the dogs,
the sound of the German soldiers, Yimach Shemam V'Zichram, Schnell, Schnell, Schnell. That's the word that was said a billion times in the Holocaust. Schnell, 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 Schnell. The sounds of machine gun fire.
The Stuka, it was a plane the Germans used, which was not a very good plane. It's called the Stuka, but when it came down, it made a tremendous
noise.
Yes, it would terrify.
Nothing new. That's what it says here. Yeah. It says over here.
The Israelis use that. Yeah. The Davidka.
Don't underestimate the koyach of noise.
In World War I, the British, Australians, and New Zealands were in charge of attacking Beersheba. They lined up 1,000 horsemen, horse to horse, and they charged
right
2 miles against the Ottoman soldiers, making noise, yelling.
Yelling, exactly. That's exactly what it says.
Turned around, and that's how they won Beersheba.
Exactly.
And then they went
It's the terror. It's the sound. Rashi goes
in. You ever been in Beersheba? It's a beautiful museum.
You gotta read this Rashi. You have a chance. You read this Rashi. Rashi goes into utter detail describing the sounds of war. This is an incredible Rashi. And Rashi goes pshat. Pshat in the pasuk. Don't be afraid of the clinging of the shields, the sound. Al tiru, don't be afraid of the neighing of the horses and the galloping of the horses. The al tachbazu, don't be afraid of the soldiers that are screaming on the top of their lungs. And the al ta'aretsu, don't be afraid of the shofar, the sound of the shofar. That's blowing. That's a terrifying sound, which means they're about to kill you. You hear all those sounds? Who cares? It's just noise. Who cares? It's noise pollution. What's the number one complaint? 311. 311. The number one complaint. 311. 90% of the 311 calls is too much noise. Could you send down the police to tell this guy to make less noise? Noise pollution. I had a guy in my block, he called mom, she called all the highest officers to people in government because the building two blocks away had a generator on top of the roof. And it made so for he I don't hear anything. And it made so he couldn't sleep. He cannot sleep at night because of the generator on the next block on the top of the roof. 10-story building is making too much noise. And they came down to his house, and they took meter, they took measurements, and they went to the building, and you know what they want to see? And he won. You speak up. It's amazing how far you can get to fight with people. And he actually won, and the building had a, and like people are looking at him, what? And I don't hear anything. My father lived under the trains in Bar Park. When he grew up in Bar Park, we used to go to the trains, the clean of the trains in New Utrecht in Bar Park. How did you go to sleep? The train says, I never heard it. never heard the train. Never. You get so used to it. Oh yeah, every know the Brooklyn College. You can hear from even here. You can hear
the train.
You hear you live next door to Brooklyn College, man. You hear the clock?
Well, yeah.
You hear?
I get used to it.
You totally used to it. You don't hear it, right? You don't get used to it. So Moshe says the Shkoy Mashiach says you're going to war. You know what they can do with war? They can make a lot of noise. They're going to terrify you. Don't be afraid. Oh, now we have answered our question. Why from the Taryag Mitzvahs? If you only have the Zuchus of Shema Yisrael, you're okay. Yeah, what about Tefillin? And what about Mezuzah? And what about Shabbos? Or even Kosher? What about Talmud Torah? Keneged Kulam? If you learn the Daf Yomi, even if you just show up in the last 5 minutes of Daf Yomi, it's Kedai, don't worry, you'll survive the Muhammad. No, you know what you need in war? You need one very specific mitzvah. Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokim Hashem Echa. What? My high.
Kol Rom.
Oh, what are the words? Shema, listen. Shema, listen. Listen, Yisrael. Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. You go into war. The most potent tool of war is sound. Nemeila, you need an antidote to sound. What is the antidote? The antidote is listen to this coil that goes out in the world every single day. Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Sound, sound is not just, as we started, you know, there's a lot of times of war. A lot of wars today, war, you know, ugly, blood, death, nukes. But war is much more than just nukes. There's a war over the minds to present information, to be influenced, to spin a story the way that fits into your mold. Everyone is making noise today in one way or another. In the most extreme example, in battlefield, they're cleaning the shields. If it's not media advertisements, you go and see a sign on the bus station, you listen to the radio. There's noise. There's sound. They're trying to control you. They're trying. There's good and there's bad. Okay, there's good and there's bad. You now have to fight a battle. Don't be influenced by all the noise. All you need to know, the only noise you need to hear in this world is Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. That's the only sound you need to hear. And when you shema, hearken, when you, it doesn't just mean to hear literally, but we're talking over here in raw terms. If you just have Shema Yisrael, if you just listen to the sound of Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, that is the antidote to all the other sounds of the crazy world that are coming to try to control your mind. The sounds of the weapons, the sounds of the horses, the sounds of the soldiers, the sounds of the shofar. They're dangerous. These are overwhelming. But the Koyim Meshulach Muhammad says there's an antidote to their sound. There is my sound. You need specifically this mitzvah, because this is the only mitzvah that has a concept of listening to sound, not just sound in its literal sense, in its greater, larger than life sense of Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad.
And this is the same vein. We're fighting for our lives also on Yom Kippur. So we want
Muhammad, that's what I'm saying. There's a Muhammad. Yeah. There's a Mekachigim. The Mekachigim are saying he's no good. And
that's the only thing we said about Hashem.
You have to say, it's very, this is mounted in the same passage. Look what we got. The Omar Aleihem. Shema Yisrael. If you only have the zechus of listening to the sound of Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, Atem Krim Ahim Elokeinu Alechem, then that's the antidote to Al Yerach Levavchem Al Tiru V'Al Tachmuzu V'Al Ta'aretzu Me'em. If you don't read Rashi, this whole part doesn't make any sense. Rashi says each one of these words is referring to a sound. Oh, now we understand. Shema, listen to the sound of Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Just concentrate on that sound. All the other sounds, it's noise.
You have to hear this story.
We're listening.
There were two friends in Golan Heights. There was one who was a religious guy, very religious, and the other one was completely chofshi, was not religious at all. And the war went on, and it was very severe, tanks and whatever. And the religious guy said the four times that Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu, and he said it with the non-stop the whole time. And the other one says, enough, you said it once. Okay, why are you repeating it so much? And you know, and he didn't understand. And the religious guy who said Shema Yisrael was wounded. He was wounded, was taken away. And the Chofshi stood there and he said, he started to say, Shema Yisrael Hashem again. He continued what the other one said. He was not a believer. But at that moment, in that war, it was such a severe war. And he said it,
he survived the war. Powerful story.
Yeah.
Okay, let me wind down. The last Yisayit, short, just the end of the parish, is Egla Rufa. Egla Rufa, we know that Yosef, Yaakov Avinu, after Yaakov Avinu, Ol Yosef Chai, V'chiyu Moshe Chol Eretz Yishayim, V'yofa Gliba, Kiloi Hemelohem. I don't believe, it's not possible. So what did he do? Yosef said to his father, Yaakov, the Agolos. V'yares v'agolos v'atechi ruach Yaakov Avinu. Why Agolos? Why was it the Agolos brought Yaakov Avinu back to life? What was it about the Agolos? So Chazal say, Rashi says, the last thing that Yaakov Avinu, they studied together before, the last time they learned together, they studied together, they were learning the parasha of Egla Arufa. So what is the connection between Egla Arufa, Egla Arufa? So Derech Pshat, what's the connection? What was the Hashkacha Pratis? That they should be learning that Sugya. They should be learning that Sugya the moment, the last moment, when they departed. Obviously, I call it Hashkacha. Why weren't they learning Masech the Ksubas? The Tanai Ksuba, the Ksubas Ben Dichrin, Nichsim, look, why weren't they learning that? Why was the Hashkacha Pratis that the Daf they were learning the moment before they departed was Egla Aruf? In the Kapar of Egla Aruf, Rashi says he's supposed to take the Egla. Egla is an eagle, it's within its first year. It's not yet eligible, it's not yet old enough to have children. And the Nachal is a place that nothing grows. And the person that died did not have children. It says he's all alone. It seems like he could have had children, could have more children. And Rashi says these three things have in common. They did not produce Peros. The victim was cut off from this world without fruit, without a legacy, without Peros. The Egel is the atonement because it doesn't have any Peros. It's too young to have children. And the Nachal is a location where nothing grows. So therefore, it's like the Chut HaMeshulash. These three things together will be an atonement for what could have been. What could have been? Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu, Tavoy Egla Bashnasa Sheloi Osisa Peres Viteoref B'Mochem She'Eino Osisa Peres L'Chaper Al Harigosai Al Shalzeh Sheloi Hinichuhu Peres. Yaakov Avinu, Yosef Avinu was away from Saul for 22 years. What was he thinking those 22 years? What could have been? What could have been? I lost a lot. I lost out a whole life. I could have been at home with my father. I could have succeeded him. This could have happened. That, what could have, what should have, what could have been? And now here I am. I'm a slave and I'm in Egypt. I'm in a dungeon. I'm here. Even when he was Mishnah Lamelech, but what kind of life was it? All alone, without his heritage, where he came from. You look back your whole life. What could have been? Look at all of the payrolls that were meant to be and never came to be. It wasn't a regular person, it's not their plan that they're gonna be thrown into a pit with snakes and scorpions and all their clothing removed and be sold naked to as a slave in Egypt. That's not what my life plan was. The whole trajectory is totally off. And it's only natural when a person finds himself in such a mess that you begin to obsess. What could have been, what should have been, what would have been? And along comes this parasha and says, don't think like that. This kapara. Don't do that. Don't obsess and look back what could have, what should have. It says, kaper la'amcha Yisrael shepudisa l'ashem yal titin d'anokim b'kerucha. V'nikaper lohem hadam. It's over. It's over. Don't think like that. Yosef, this was the antidote. The antidote for Yosef Hatzadik, the 22 years. The last thing his father told him is, there are situations in life which appear there could have been payers. There could have been beautiful payers. And then something happens, and a person that drives him mad. The Torah says, no. V'nikaper lohem hadam. It's over. It's forgiven. It's finished. Kapara is closure. Don't dwell upon the payrolls that could have been. That's what the whole purpose of the year is. Take an eagle that did not produce peros, in the nachal that does not produce peros, and shemechaper on the person died without producing peros. So what does it mean to shemechaper? It's over. Closure. It's Hashem's calculation as to why it happened like this. You don't get involved. The people of Klal Yisrael have to have closure over what could have been with this person had he lived a regular, normal life. There is kapara. V'nikaper lohem adam. Yosef, you're going out to your brothers. you're gonna have a very difficult 22 years. It's natural, it's the human condition, human nature to obsess what could have been, what should have been, had I not provoked my brothers, had I told them the dreams, had I not spoke to my father, had I not gone on this trip, my father told me I should go look after you, this, you could think the whole day, what could have been, what should have been, and now look what I have. Don't do that. V'nikaper, remember, there's a parish of Egla Harufa. Egla Harufa puts an end to a kapara, a closure. Kapara is associated with closure. It's done, we're finished. There was a problem, there's atonement, finished, it's over. Don't obsess what it's now, it's over. The same way when Yaakov Avinu saw the Agolos, he came back to life. When we read this week about the Agolos, we come back to life. Because now when we read this, we think about Yaakov Avinu. Just like Chazal said, "Yares v'agolos v'atechi ruach Yaakov avihem." Now it's our turn. When we come to Parshas Shoftim, and the last parsha, the last sugya is Egla Rufa. Egla Rufa. Who taught us Egla Rufa? Who taught us Yaakov? Yaakov Avinu. Our legacy. We're connected to Yaakov Avinu. We're not alone. Ki Yaakov chevel nachalosai. All the brachos of it is a chizuk to. You take out a wedding album and you look at the old pictures. You either get very depressed, or it can nostalgia. It opens up. It's a renewal. Ah, look where I come from. Look at the investment. Look at the bracha. This week, we're now holding in the middle of Elul. It's time for some chizuk. The ultimate chizuk is Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov. Ah, Eko Arufa. This was the last thing that this before we departed from Yaakov Avinu. This is what he taught us. The goal is the 22 years as Ma'is of a similar one is the goal is of Klal Yisrael. It's the chizuk for Klal Yisrael to remember our legacy, our Mesorah, to Mirtz Hashem, to get through the Yimei Hadin with Rachamim, Lerotzim, and witness the Yisrael of Hashem, the Mirror of Yimeinu Ami.